I'd like to invite you, if you would, to take out your Bible and turn to Matthew chapter 27. Matthew chapter 27 will be our text for most of this morning. And as you do that, we want to again say welcome to all that are here, especially those that are visiting. And for those that are online watching us this week, we appreciate you tuning in to this morning's worship service. I know we look forward to the opportunity to be back together as a whole church family, and Lord willing, that will be next Sunday. But today we are in this circumstance that we find ourselves with worship this morning at 10 o'clock through Zoom, and then tonight our adult Bible study, which normally would be 9 a.m. on Sunday morning, will be at 5 o'clock tonight, and we're studying from the book of Daniel. And so I invite you to join us tonight as we do that, to click on the 5 o'clock link for Zoom, and we'll be talking about Daniel. And I said last week as we closed class that tonight will be an interesting class because we're going to be talking about some of the things that we really don't get to read much about, things that are fascinating to the mind. We're going to be talking about the role of angels behind the scenes. And so hope you will tune in. I think I ended by saying, you know, we're going to have a discussion about guardian angels and things like that. So if you're curious about that, tune on in tonight at 5 o'clock. And also, as we get from Daniel chapter 10 into Daniel chapter 11, is one of the most fascinating prophecies that are ever given. It's very specific in its nature and the things that Daniel was curious about. So you will tune in tonight at 5 o'clock. I want you to imagine for a moment if there's an individual who goes to the doctor, and the doctor comes out and says, I have some good news and I have some bad news. And the individual want to know, you know, okay, tell me the bad news first. Let's leave this on a good note. And the doctor says to him, I'm sorry, you have a terminal disease. And the individual says, well, what's the good news then? The good news is that there is a remedy. If you follow my prescription to the letter, you will have a long life. You'll be able to deal with this on a day-to-day basis, and it will not cut your life short. And he says, okay, great. What's the remedy? He says, well, here's the medicine that you have to take. But the one thing about this medicine is you cannot eat chocolate anymore. Now, for some people, that might be, okay, who cares, whatever. But for this individual, this was the end-all, be-all. And so he turns to the doctor and he says, well, don't eat chocolate. I'll follow what you tell me to do to the letter with that exception. I'm going to keep eating chocolate. Now, what's the point of that? The point of that for our consideration this morning is that people come to Christ oftentimes with a list of preconceptions. They come to Christ with a list of conditions that, Christ, I will follow you as long as what you call me to does not interfere with what I want. I think that's pretty par for the course, if you will, as we look all around. If the conditions of Christ are not accepted by me, then I'm not going to accept all of Christ. But the reality as Christians is that if Christ is God, all conditions are gone. If Christ is who he claimed to be, then wherever he speaks, whatever he says, however it applies to me, our response must be, I will follow. I'll obey. And when we come to Matthew chapter 27, we find Jesus on the cross. And maybe you've heard lessons about what Jesus says on the cross. My father was a preacher, and growing up, in that time, preachers would move every 2, 3, 4, maybe 5 years. There was a sermon that he preached that I heard several times, and is one of my all-time favorite lessons he ever preached because of how powerful it was. And it was called Seven Words on the Cross. And what he did is he went through and he examined everything that Jesus said on the cross. And I want just for a moment just to kind of reflect on those things. And maybe one day I'll preach my version of that sermon, but not today. The first thing that we have recorded that Jesus spoke while he was on the cross is in Luke chapter 23 and verse 34 when he looked down and then he prayed saying, "Father, forgive them for they know not what they do." Then he turns to the thief as the thief confesses him, his belief in Jesus, and asks to be remember when Jesus comes into the kingdom. And Jesus responds, "Today you will be with me in paradise." Or as he looks down and he sees his mother and he says, "Woman, behold your son," in John chapter 19, verse 26. And then he turns to John and says, "Behold your mother." And then as the natural elements change and we go from a period of light to a period of darkness, in Matthew 27 and in verse 46, the translation of what he says is, my God, why have you forsaken me?" And then in quick succession, you have these several last things that he said. In John 19, verse 28, he says, "I thirst." In John chapter 19 and verse 30, he says, "It is finished." And then finally, in Luke 23 and verse 46, he says, "Father, into your hands I commit my spirit." Each one of those sayings is deserving of its own lesson because they're all significant in their own way. They all said something about Jesus. But I don't want to talk about what Jesus says while he's on the cross. Rather, this morning I want to look and say what people said as they surrounded the cross, and what they said towards the cross. And so we call it seven words around the cross. In Matthew chapter 27, verse 35 through verse 50, we have this scene of Jesus on the cross and his death and his crucifixion. And beginning a reading in verse 35 of Matthew chapter 27, this is what we see. It says, "And when they had crucified him, they divided his garments among them by casting lots. And then they sat down and kept watch over him there, and over his head they put the charge against him, which read, 'This is Jesus, the King of the Jews.' Then two robbers were crucified with him, one on the right hand and one on the left. And those who passed by," verse 29, "derided him, wagging their heads and saying, 'Who, you who would destroy the temple and rebuild it in 3 days, save yourself. If you're the Son of God, come down from the cross.' So also the chief priests with the scribes and the elders mocked him, saying, 'He saved others. He himself cannot save. He is the King of Israel. Let him come down from the cross, and we will believe in him. He trusts in God. Let him deliver him now if he desires it. For he said, 'I'm the Son of God.' And the robbers who were crucified with him also reviled him in the same way. Now from the sixth hour there was darkness over all the land until the ninth hour. And about the ninth hour, Jesus cried out with a loud voice, saying, 'Eli, Eli, lama sabachthani,' that is, 'My God, why have you forsaken me?' And some of the bystanders, hearing it, said, 'This man is calling for Elijah.' And one of them at once ran, took a sponge, filled it with sour wine, and put it on a reed and gave it to him to drink. But the other said, 'Wait, let us see whether Elijah will come to save him.' And Jesus cried out again with a loud voice and yielded up his spirit." The Gospel of Matthew, more than any other gospel, gives people's reaction to the cross. And the reason is that Matthew's gospel is the gospel that was written to the Jews. And so Matthew identifies how the Jews responded to Jesus. And what we see is that men had a mixed reaction. There were mixed emotions, varied estimations of who Jesus' identity was and what his activity was all about. For those that trusted and obeyed Jesus, there's no mixed emotion. There is no varied estimation What Jesus did, his willingness to come and to die for sinners, was the grace of God demonstrated. Because we understand, if God left us alone, if God left us to ourselves, that we would be hopelessly lost, wouldn't we? In 1 Peter chapter 3 and verse 18, Christ also suffered once for sins, the righteous for the unrighteous, that he might bring us to God. But you know, even Jesus doesn't please everyone. Even Jesus found rejection. And I think it might be something that is easy to do, to see Jesus and understand. In John chapter 3, verse 16, he came and he died for all the world, and yet all the world doesn't accept him. It may be easy to conclude that Jesus' sacrifice was in vain. But the reality, I would suggest, is that he paid the price so everyone who did believe could be freed from sin. Not that everyone would believe. I like what C.S. Lewis said. He said, the Son of God became the Son of Man so that the sons of men may become the sons of God. But not only were the sufferings of Christ not vain, they were also victorious, weren't they? Jesus said when he was on the cross, "It is finished." In a tone of victory, Jesus confesses that the work that he came to do is a work that was accomplished, that it was completed. But not everyone there that day would accept his work. Not everyone that day would accept his claims. And so we see several messages around the cross that were spoken. And what these are people who came to Jesus with conditions. We have to watch out for that today in ourselves. Do we come to Jesus with conditions? Or do we come to him and say, Lord, I'll take all of you and everything you say? When we look around the cross, the first thing that we see is the message of skepticism. In verse 39 and in verse 40 of Matthew 27, those who passed by derided him, wagging their heads and saying, you who would destroy the temple and rebuild it in 3 days, save yourself. If you're the Son of God, come down from the cross. See, these people had heard something that Jesus had spoken before, and they were skeptical about what it was that he said. What was it that he said? You go back to John chapter 2, and you read in verse 18 through verse 21 that Jesus, when he was asked, what sign do you do? What is it you're going to do to show us who you are? Jesus said, destroy the temple, and in 3 days I will raise it up. And the Jews then said, it's taken 46 years to build this temple, and you'll raise it up in 3 days? But John ends there by saying, but Jesus was speaking about the temple of his body. See, these people heard Jesus say, I'm going to destroy the temple, and automatically they thought he's speaking of Herod's temple. They're speaking of the temple where the Jews worship God. But what they didn't understand is that Christ was foretelling his death, his burial, and his resurrection. Jesus was answering their question, what is it you're going to do? What sign so we can believe? What's the sign? Jesus says, my death, my burial, my resurrection. Why didn't they understand that? Because that's not the first time that Jesus talked about his death. Why didn't they understand that this was going to be a necessity? And I would suggest it's the same reason a lot of people didn't understand the parables. They weren't seeking truth. And their hearts had become dull, and their eyes could barely see, and their ears they could barely hear, because they weren't wanting truth. I think there is skepticism today. And it's revealed in people's approach to the Bible. There is disbelief in the Bible. I was reading an article just yesterday, and the article used terminology to just suggest that the Bible is just a book of stories. You know, it's interesting to me as I read this article is it came from a writer in the UK. In a non-religious secular society, he looked at it and said, well, you know, this is a book that's full of contradictions and it's full of mistruths. It's not accurate. But what is true in other parts of the world in a lot of ways is true here today, isn't it? If you were to take a survey of people that believe in teachings of the Bible, you will find many people don't believe its teaching. That many people will, in fact, twist its teaching to teach things that aren't true. Many people today will deny that there is a personal devil. They will deny an eternal hell, but ironically, they believe in a heaven. I want the good, but not the bad. I was listening to an individual in a panel in a discussion that Jesus was teaching and taught transgenderism. It's what you have is people taking truth of Scripture and reading into it preconceived ideas. Why? Because they don't believe it's from God anyways. The way of Jesus is not a way of skepticism. That doesn't mean we don't question and try to find in more detail what the meaning of these things are, but we have to understand that the way of Jesus is a way of faith. It is a way of faith. It is believing God for who He is and for what He says, because we know God is truth. The second message that was spoken around the cross was the message of scoffing. In verse 41, the chief priests, along with the scribes and the elders, mocked him, saying, "He himself can save; he cannot save himself. If he is the king of Israel, and will come down now from the cross, and we will believe him. He trusts in God; let God deliver him now, if He desires him. For he said, I am the Son of God." And the robbers who were crucified with him reviled him in the same way. You have people, they look at Jesus, and they're verbally mocking him, saying to him, prove that you're the Son of God by coming down. You ever stop and think how wonderful it is that he didn't come down? That he stayed on that cross. See, love compelled him to go to the cross. And it was love that held him on the cross. The people that were there as they were saying these words did not understand the necessity of the cross and the sacrifice on the cross. Because there is no redemption, there is no salvation, there is no hope without the cross. And Jesus himself said this in Matthew 16, verse 21, where he is showing his disciples that he must go to Jerusalem and suffer many things at the hand of the elders, the chief priests, and be killed on the third day, be raised. This was a divine must. It was essential. There's no other way for us to get to God except by the sacrifice and the blood of Christ. We sing that old hymn, "What can wash away my sins?" Nothing but the blood of Christ. That's why the message of Christ and Him crucified was the priority in Paul's preaching in 1 Corinthians 2. I preach nothing among you except Jesus Christ and Him crucified. They didn't understand the necessity of the cross. And so just because he didn't come down from the cross, they said, oh, you're not who you claim to be. It's because of who he was that he stayed on the cross. Then there's the message of similarity. Notice in verse 44 that we already read that the robbers that were crucified with him also reviled him. These robbers that are dying, they're hanging on the cross and they're going to die the same kind of death that Jesus is dying. Here's the religionists, here's the chief of the Jews, the priests and so on, and they themselves start taunting him. They do exactly the same thing. They're surrounded by voices of unbelief. And what do? They start echoing those same voices. Why? Because that's what they were hearing. How many people judge Christ based on what the crowd says? Based on what other people say? They judge Jesus, and rather than finding out for themselves, because this is what someone, even in the category, maybe it's family, maybe it's parents, mother, father, and their religion. I think we have to be careful, don't we? Of being guilty of only knowing what Jesus, about Jesus, by what other people say. The other day I had come to my door a couple of individuals, and they were trying to sell me solar. Well, they work for a company that's based in Utah. One of them had on a jacket that had a Brigham Young symbol there. And we got to talking, and they asked me, so what do you do? And I said, oh, I'm a preacher. I'm an evangelist. Like, oh, really? We've gone on missions, and we've done this kind of work. And they said, what is the one piece of biblical advice that you would give us? And I said to them, stick to the word. I said, no offense, but I believe in only the Bible, not something else that was written after the Bible. I told them why, Jude verse 3, it was once delivered for all the saints. But I said, don't take any man's word for it. Don't listen to what any individual says, even if it's me. Listen to what God says. And they said, what's that passage again? I said, Jude 3. They flipped over to Jude 3 in their phone. I say flip. It's not flipping anymore. They turn on their phone to Jude 3, and they said, wow, never seen that before. I said, well, anytime you guys want to come by and talk about the Bible, come on by. I'm not going to buy your solar, but come on by, and we'll talk about the Bible anytime. It's a very interesting conversation, but that's how so many people find themselves today. I know this about the Bible and about Jesus because this is what I've been told. What we need to do is know the Bible firsthand, not just mimic what we've heard someone else say about it, but know what it says itself. And not to know Jesus secondhand, but to know what Jesus firsthand. Not what others say about Jesus or think about Jesus, but what Jesus says. The message of similarity. And then there's the message of stumbling, or the message of misinterpretation. In verse 45 through verse 47, Jesus speaks words, and the words are Eli, Eli, lama sabachthani, which means, my God, why have you forsaken me? And many of the bystanders there heard what Jesus said and said, he's calling for Elijah. How do you get from Eli, Eli, which is translated, my God, to Elijah? And I think there's some debate that people have had about this. Is it that they misheard what Jesus said, or was there some other conclusion that they were drawing in their minds? Whatever it was, they were looking at Jesus as a sinner who was being condemned. We look at this passage and, you know, maybe we make a comment, you know, when Jesus says this, God's turning his back on him. I don't know if that's exactly the case or not. I don't know if God is actually forsaking Jesus like maybe we would perceive, and that's the subject for another time. But if you look at it from their perspective, whether or not God was actually turning his back on Jesus, to them, standing there, Jesus was the most condemned sinner. It's similar to Job's friends and their accusation when Job faced suffering. They said, Job, you must be a sinner because this is the result of your sin. Or you look at the Apostle Paul when he's on the island of Malta and the snake jumps out and grabs a hold of him, the poisonous snake, and they say, oh, this is retribution because you did not die in the shipwreck. It was easy for people to conclude, even his apostles did, When they saw the man that was born blind in John 9, they said, who sinned, this man or his parents? It was easy to conclude that suffering was the direct result of sin. What they didn't understand when they saw Jesus on the cross is that he wasn't dying for his own sin. He was dying because of our sin. They looked at him and not only what he said, but his work, and they misinterpreted it. They didn't understand Jesus was dying on behalf of humanity. Why did Jesus need to do that? Because of God's holy character. Because God is pure. Because God is holy. And so, in order for God to not forsake us, God, whether in actuality or in perception, forsake Christ. In Hebrews 13 and verse 5, keep your life free from the love of money. Be content with what you have, for he has said, I will never leave you nor forsake you. The next message that's spoken on the cross is a message of sensationalism. In verse 48 and verse 49, one of them ran at once and took a sponge and filled it with sour wine, put it on a reed and gave it to him to drink. But the other said, wait, let us see whether Elijah will come to save him. Those people wanted to see something remarkable. They wanted to see if Elijah, the great prophet of the old, would come from heaven to deliver Jesus. They were looking for something. Something that was fascinating. Something that was sensational to look to Jesus. Aren't there people like that today? They want sensationalism in their religion. They want sensationalism in their service. They want sensationalism in their sermon. Something to entertain rather than something to edify. Something that will uplift the emotions rather than motivate the life. Paul talks about that in 2 Timothy 4, doesn't he? The people that will not endure sound teaching, but they have itching ears that want someone to tickle those ears. There's people all over today that want something emotional to spur them. What we have is God's word. Well, let's look at two other passages. These are all negative things that are said around the cross. I want to look at two other passages that speak of positive things that were said. The first is in Luke chapter 23 and verse 39 through verse 43, and this is the message of supplication. We already addressed the fact that the thieves that were on the cross next to Jesus turned and railed against him because they heard other people doing it. But in Luke chapter 23, what we find is that there was a thief who had a change of heart. In verse 40, he rebukes the other thief that was railing on Jesus. In verse 41 of Luke 23, he confesses Jesus. He says, this man has done nothing wrong. And so in verse 42, he says to Jesus, remember me when you come into your kingdom. Something happened to that thief where he developed a faith that was sincere. And Jesus instantaneously gives him hope. Jesus saves him. A lot of people make a lot to do about that and its connection or lack of connection with baptism that's preached from the day of Pentecost on. But just be mindful, if anyone could save anyone they chose to save, would it not be Jesus? And so Jesus turned to this man who humbly confessed in sincerity who Jesus was, and Jesus saved him. And then there's the message of sincerity. In Mark chapter 15 and verse 34, beginning all the way down to verse 39, it says, at the ninth hour, Jesus cried with a loud voice, Eloi, Eloi, lama sabachthani, which means, my God, why have you forsaken me? And some of the bystanders, as we have already read, hearing it, said, behold, he is calling Elijah. And someone ran and filled a sponge and filled it with sour wine, put on reed, gave it to him to drink, saying, wait, let us see whether Elijah will come and take him down. And Jesus uttered a loud cry and breathed his last, and the curtain of the temple was torn in two from top to bottom. And when the centurion who stood facing him saw that in this way he breathed his last, he said, truly, this man was the Son of God. When that centurion witnessed how Jesus died, he was convinced, he was convicted, and as a result, he confessed. He honestly said, this was the Son of God. As we approach Christ and his cross and Christ in our life, how do we approach him? Do we say, Lord, I'll take you, but only so far as I want to go? When your will intervenes with my will, then my will override yours. We need to rather have a message or of sincerity in our life. Jesus, I will follow you wherever you take me. You know, there was another voice that spoke that day. It was the most powerful voice spoken. It was the voice that audibly had proclaimed on two other occasions, this is my beloved Son in whom I am well pleased. But now at the cross, this voice speaks in power. Speaks in power as you read in Matthew's account, the curtain in the temple is torn from top to bottom. It speaks loudly as the earth quaked and the dead rose and gave testimony about Jesus. And it would speak loudly on the day of Pentecost when Peter said that this Jesus whom you crucified, God has made both Lord and Christ. Is that the voice we listen to? That's the voice that we need to come with supplication and saying, remember me. And that's the voice that we need to sincerely speak and say to, I believe that Jesus is the Christ, the Son of God. Maybe there's someone who needs to respond to the gospel invitation. You haven't yet named the name of Christ. How do we do that? Peter confessed it. When they said, what must we do? Peter said, repent and be baptized. Jesus himself spoke those words in Mark chapter 16. He who believes and is baptized. Jesus says in Matthew 28, that go teach all nations, baptizing them in the name of the Father, Son, and the Holy Spirit. That's what we need to do. Maybe that's what you need to do. If there's someone here that needs to do it, there's a time for it. Maybe it's someone at home that needs to do it. If that's the case, let us know. Call us, and we'll make sure we do it. Maybe we're not living the way we ought to live as Christians. We have gotten to the point in our lives where we've gone to the great physician, and we said, physician, heal me. And the physician says, okay, but you have to follow my remedy to the T. You say, oh, but I don't want to give up this. Then it's not going to work, is it? We need to take Jesus completely for who he is and for all that he has said. Again, thank you for being here this morning, for those that are online. And again, if you have any need subject to the invitation, let us know. For those that are here, if there's anything we can do for you this morning, why not come forward while we stand and sing this song?